is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, joined by Joseph Umar, the Executive Director of Secure Free Society. The topic is Latin America, South America, and turmoil, ranging across a vast landscape, capitals to secondary cities to the triple canopy jungle of the Central America. You will have noticed over these last months and years, thanks to our colleague Senator Cabal in Bogota, we've focused on the mystery of why Colombia, a state that has prosperity and modernity to equal of any in South America and the United States, is struggling with mass protests, especially in the part of the country around Cali. Joseph, a very good evening to you. Before we turn to the protests in Cuba, we need to speak to your presentation within these next hours. Why Colombia's violent protests matter to the United States. This is a function of the Heritage Foundation, as well as your enterprise, the Secure Free Society. The video that accompanies this is alarming. You demonstrate with video that I presume the protesters themselves made of them practicing combat with the police, including shields and machetes and long sticks, almost as if they are training to fight the Roman army somewhere in the north of Britain 2,000 years ago. What am I looking at, Joseph, and what is your presentation within these next hours about Colombia? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern, myself and a colleague named Selena Reyaluyu from the National Defense University are going to be presenting at the Heritage Foundation on the Independence Day of Colombia. And July 20th is the Independence Day of Colombia. And unfortunately, because Colombia has been under this assault since pretty much going back to the beginning of May or late April, there is rumors, or more than just rumors, there's intelligence that suggests that tomorrow Colombia is going to be once again facing this kind of disturbance, violent uprising, mass protests. And so what we're going to do tomorrow is we're going to talk about what's actually going on in Colombia and why that matters for the United States. And what I did with the video, which I showed you a preview, John, because we're going to launch that tomorrow, is we showed that not all of these protesters have peaceful intentions. And that's not to say that there are some protesters that are obviously with legitimate grievances and are expressing those grievances. But at this point, there's also subversive actors. And one of those actors is called La Primera Línea, which means the front line. And what we show in those videos is we show clear evidence of La Primera Línea, the front line, practicing to engage the police, the Colombian police, in battle. They want to provoke the police to react against the protesters so that they can then denounce the police among the international community. But the way they provoke the police is in a very violent manner, using Molotov cocktails, using machetes, using all kinds of blunt objects, which is why we've seen so many police injuries and even fatalities in the recent protests over the last several weeks.
We will speak of Colombia when we're joined by Senator Cabal. We turn now, however, to violent protests in Cuba. Joseph, the fog of war, the reporting is incomplete. We do not have transparency. However, the Pope is calling for peace and dialogue in Havana. Pope Francis called on Sunday just past for peace and dialogue in Cuba after the unprecedented nationwide protests rocked the communist country. I also have this report from Reuters in these last hours. Cuba, which kept coronavirus infections low last year, now has the highest rate of contagion per capita in Latin America, strained healthcare sectors, and helped stoke rare protests that have roiled the communist-run island. In addition, why we don't have better information is that there is a Great Wall of Cuba along with the Great Wall of China. And I read from the Wall Street Journal report, opinion observing the technology, calling on the Biden administration to penetrate the blocking that's going on out of Havana. I'll begin with the Pope's call, Joseph. And in decades past, earlier popes have traveled through Latin America. They enjoy a great deal of credibility when they call for dialogue. Is dialogue credible in Havana? How do you measure these protests? If they're driven by the pandemic, does that mean they will end when the vaccines arrive, or is this something deeper?
So, John, this is much deeper. The pandemic is just one contributing factor among many, many contributing factors. And honestly, this is really about the 60-year-plus struggle that the Cubans have essentially faced under the authoritarian and totalitarian grip of the Castro regime. Unfortunately, Pope Francis, I don't think, has much credibility to call for dialogue because he visited Havana in recent years, and he spoke nothing of the human rights violations. He spoke nothing of the high levels of lack of economic opportunity and lack of economic growth on the island, and spoke mostly against the United States, frankly, in his speech in Cuba, doing a favor for the Castros. So, no, I don't think dialogue is going to be something that's going to be on the table right now. But what the Cubans are asking for is they're asking for liberty. They're asking for freedom. They're asking the ability to express themselves. And they're going through probably one of the biggest uprisings that they've had since 1994. In 94, there was this famous uprising against Fidel Castro called the Maliconazo. So there are some similarities with this uprising in the sense that that happened during what was called the special period because Cuba lost its largest benefactor at the time, Soviet Union. And now you can arguably say that Cuba is undergoing another special period because they lost their current largest benefactor, which was the oil money of Venezuela. But there are a big difference, and the biggest difference between 94 and today is Fidel Castro. Back then they had Fidel Castro, they had the figure, they had his authoritarian grip, they had his image, they had many ways that Castro was able to steer that protest so that they didn't crumble the regime. In this case, Miguel Díaz-Canel, the current president of Cuba, does not have that kind of power. He does not have that sway over the people. And not to mention, I think the people are much more savvy to the kind of manipulations that the Castro regime does. So I'm curious to see how far this protest could go, but I don't think they're going to be able to be successful unless they get some outside help. The Cubans are going to need outside help because the regime has outside help. As we know, we've reported on, John, from Russia, from Venezuela, from Iran, from all the bad actors of the world. So we definitely need to get rally behind the Cubans, who are essentially fighting for maybe their last chance at liberty in their current generation.
The anecdotes, and it's fog of war, so we don't have confirmation. The anecdotes are of brute violence, including murder or shooting people in front of their families. There's something I'm told called the Black Berets, which are the regime's enforcers, the bully boys, spreading throughout the country. It is significant that all the protests are not in Havana. We have a little video. Joseph, there's a very large diaspora in the United States. The diaspora is fully engaged. What is it that can be done from the United States? I mentioned the cyber wall that has Cuba put up. Is that a significant factor? Is money a significant factor? I mean, what can you do for people who are so poor and so cut off?
Well, I think there's many things that can be done. The first and the most important is to make sure that we amplify the correct narrative. Narratives in this day and age, they win conflicts. They win warfare. And the regime is successful at pushing a false narrative that this is essentially about the embargo and that the Cuban people are looking to lift the embargo, then we're going to set the Cuban people back decades, if not more. But if we get the narrative right and we know that this is really about the regime and that the regime's ability to basically manipulate the circumstances on the island and to keep the Cuban people oppressed for, you know, going on almost more than half a century, then I think we can give the Cuban people a lot of support. To your question, John, about the Great Firewall with Cuba, I think that's another important area that can be addressed by international support. The internet can't be blacked out forever. We're in the 21st century in 2021, and at this day and age, there's many ways to connect Cuba, to connect the island to the World Wide Web on many different platforms. And I think that that's something that the United States and other countries can help the Cuban people with. So the regime might be able to shut down one server, might be able to shut down another server, but they're not going to be able to do that forever. And I think that that's one way that the United States essentially can help. I know there's some congressmen and congresswomen, particularly from Florida, from the U.S., that have asked for this, that have asked for the United States to help by providing internet to the island so that they can be able to get their narrative and their word out to the international community.
Joseph, let us emphasize the nexus of bad actors coming together in Havana. You mentioned Russia, the Kremlin, certainly. Managua, Ortega's regime in Managua, which stands second to none in repression. Caracas, Maduro's regime. But then there's Tehran, The Islamic Republic has tentacles into this part of the world because of its connection to Hezbollah and Venezuela. And not to leave out, there are suggestions that there are other radicals throughout Latin America who would sorely feel a setback if Havana were to plunge into chaos, where it seems to be at the edge of now, but it's very difficult to say. So what this adds up to, I believe that if we can be toughened men and look in history, is that Moscow cannot lose, Joseph. They cannot lose. There is no repression too severe for Moscow.
No, that's absolutely right. John, I said this on the last time we spoke, that if Havana doesn't use all its tools of repression, which it has a lot, then we cannot believe that they're going to actually step down from power. You mentioned the Black Wasps, which are the same military unit that they've used to suppress protesters in Venezuela. They go all the way back to the conflict in Angola. These are very well-trained, essentially assassins by the Cuban regime. They're usually deployed externally to be able to help their allies suppress protests, such as the Chavez de Maduro regime in Venezuela, but now are going to be used at home. And I'll add one more bad actor to that, John. I mean, we have Moscow, we have Tehran, we have Managua and Caracas, but we also have Beijing. And China has a lot to lose if the Cuban regime is displaced from power, because it has one of its largest signals intelligence stations in the Western Hemisphere in Cuba. It's called Lourdes. This is essentially the intelligence station that used to be run by the Soviets. Then the Chinese took it over in the mid to late 90s. And this is what they use. This is the intelligence station they use to intercept communications of Americans inside the United States. So China would definitely not want to lose their strategic ally in the Cuban regime. And you can add them to the list of bad actors that are going to be able to try to reinforce to make sure that there is no change of power in Cuba.
Joseph Umar is the executive director of Secure Free Society. We will continue about Cuba and about Colombia and about the Peru election still in abeyance. And, of course, the virus sweeping over Latin America, South America now, as it is in Europe. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.